What is up, everybody? Dr. Joe Armstrong here, and I am super excited to tell you that we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Medgene. It's a new day in animal healthcare, and Medgene is wide awake. Medgene is the first USDA-licensed producer of prescription platform vaccines. Medgene's prescription platform vaccines help veterinarians in the swine, cattle, deer, and rabbit industries respond faster and more efficiently. Learn more about Medgene's prescription platform vaccines at MedgeneLabs.com. That's MedgeneLabs.com. Or better yet, follow Medgene on Facebook and LinkedIn. Medgene, it's a new day in animal healthcare. What is up, everybody? It's Dr. Joe Armstrong. Today is 7/18/24 at 11:15 a.m. The first thing we need to get into is the human cases side. We've had some more human cases. It brings our total to 4 cases connected directly to direct contact with infected dairy cattle. And now we have more human cases out of Colorado, but this time they're connected to poultry. So back on July 3rd, CDC reported a 4th human case connected to dairy cattle. Pretty much the same story as we look at the person in question having mild eye symptoms only, receiving an antiviral, and making a full recovery. Now on July 14th, CDC announced they had confirmed several more human cases out of Colorado of H5N1, and they had identified a 5th presumptive positive that they have not given us word on yet. This time, all the cases were in farm workers who were involved in the depopulation of poultry at a poultry facility experiencing an outbreak of H5N1, which in poultry causes high path avian influenza. Similar to what we've seen on the dairy side, all of the workers reported mild symptoms, but we have a list of symptoms that has grown a little longer compared to what we had before. In dairy workers, we have conjunctivitis and mild respiratory signs, but now these workers are reporting conjunctivitis and eye tearing, as well as more typical flu symptoms like fever, chills, coughing, sore throat, and a runny nose. Now, we don't have complete sequencing data yet on these strains that are being found in these workers from a poultry farm in Colorado, but I expect it to be the same strain, the B313 strain, having first most likely circulated in cows. Now, it's been a while since we talked about human cases, but we have to remember that these are officially reported human cases, and they're likely are more cases out there that are not being reported. And as we've talked about before, that comes back to the population that is most at risk. Often, the workers that are working on dairy and poultry farms have moved here from another country. English may or may not be their first language, and they may or may not feel comfortable coming forward and reporting their illness, seeking medical help, or interacting with the government. So what does this mean on a larger scale? I'm going to leave that to my human colleagues in the realm of public health to comment on what this may mean for how the virus has changed, if there are any markers associated with more infectivity for humans. That's not my wheelhouse. In this press release from July 14th, CDC says, quote, CDC believes that the risk to the public from this outbreak remains low. These cases again underscore the risk of exposure to infected animals. There are no unexpected increases in flu activity otherwise in Colorado, or in other states affected by H5 outbreaks in cows and poultry, end quote. What this does tell us is that they are underscoring the risk of exposure to infected animals. And in general, the risk to the public is going to be low when we talk about direct contact to infected animals. But like we've talked about many, many, many times, we are in the midst of fair season, and we have county and state fairs where we do have public interacting directly with animals. So when we think about the scenario of the public interacting with animals, which is an amazing opportunity for the public and for agriculture to showcase exactly what we do and how well we do it and how well our animals are taken care of. But when we think about that scenario, we are going to have public interacting with animals directly, walking through the barns. And that direct contact, if there is an infected animal, specifically an infected lactating dairy cow, in that situation with direct contact with the public, which includes just walking through the barn where that animal is housed, changes the risk profile immensely. We have all sorts of scenarios that we are trying to plan for and trying to figure out what we're going to do in response to specific scenarios. And 99% of them, we can eliminate and dramatically reduce the risk across the board by just not having lactating dairy cattle at shows or exhibitions. I haven't made this argument yet, I think, related to this topic, but when we look at the optics for the dairy industry, if we have an H5N1 case in a person connected to a fair, the optics are disastrous. So if you didn't have enough motivation before when we're talking about ethics or the moral pieces of this and the risk we're putting on other animals and other industries by bringing lactating dairy cattle to the show, even without considering the potential risk to the public, maybe the argument about what this could do to the dairy industry will get through. A significant portion, if not all, the exposure risk can be effectively mitigated by eliminating the lactating dairy cow from the equation at a show, exhibition, county fair, state fair. Okay, I've been harping on this a lot, so let's move on. We have a big thing to talk about, and that is the ELAP program through FSA that pays for lost production associated with H5N1. As a reminder, the biggest piece of this is you must be officially positive and have a sample that is confirmed to be positive for H5N1 from your herd tested at the NVSL lab in Ames, Iowa. That is the biggest requirement for eligibility. You must be officially positive for H5N1 in your dairy herd to qualify for the ELAP FSA program. So I wanted a lot of clarification on what exactly is going to happen with this program and how it's going to work and what can we expect for payments. And as we talked about in a previous episode, it's going to be calculated on a per cow basis based on the NASS milk production data, the NASS all milk price. They're going to assume that an eligible cow is completely unproductive for 21 days and then 50% productive for another 7 days for a total of 28 days per cow. So the biggest factors in payment amounts are going to be the milk price and the number of eligible cows. We can't do a whole lot to change what the milk price is going to be. It's just going to be what it is. The all milk price will be the all milk price at the time that you become eligible for the program. I don't know how they're going to figure out that number. Are they going to run a 6-month rolling average? Is it going to be regional? Is it going to be by month? I don't know. And I don't think we have that clarification yet. But again, it's kind of out of our control anyway. The biggest question for me was, what about the number of eligible cows? Because that changes drastically how much you're going to get paid. When we look at eligibility requirements for a cow, she has to be currently lactating. She has to have been on that premise and owned, cash leased, or purchased for at least 60 days. So the cows that are eligible have to have been on your premise for not less than 60 days before the positive H5N1 test collection date. They have to be maintained for commercial milk production as part of the producer's farming operation. That operation has to have been officially tested positive for H5N1. And then the big one is they have to be removed from commercial milk production due to a confirmed or suspected H5N1 infection at some point during the 14 days before the positive test and the 120 days after the positive H5N1 test. So when I look at that eligibility requirement of having to be removed from production, we didn't have any guidance for, is there going to be a cap on this? If it truly is a large proportion of my herd and a large proportion of my cows, are they going to deny me payments because it worked out to be most of my herd? We didn't have a whole lot, and we were all a little skeptical about what was going on with these payments. But we've got clarification from FSA, and it's straightforward. If they are pulled from production due to H5N1, they are eligible. And importantly, this includes animals that are dried off due to illness associated with H5N1. So if we have an animal that's late in lactation and she gets sick, and it's probably better for that animal to just dry off rather than rejoin the milk production system at that time, that drying off event counts and that cow is eligible. So if you are impacted by H5N1 and you have an official test, then every animal you pull from production due to your impact from H5N1 is eligible. So let's look at the numbers. I've built the calculator so that I can look at estimated payments. This is estimates, so do not take these numbers as fact and the exact numbers you are going to see. But when we put in some parameters based on the NAS data and conservatively so we can get an idea of what's available, there is a decent chunk of money available. We're going to do things on a 100 cow basis just for easy math and the ability to scale that number up. It does scale because the payments are going to be per eligible cow. So that payment can change based on milk price, the milk production that they're going to use, both from NASS. Those are the big factors because basically they have set the number of days they're going to pay for at zero production, which is 21, and the number of days they're going to pay for at 50% production, which is 7. So we can calculate exactly what an estimated payment per cow is going to be, per eligible cow. So if I put in the parameters of a $20 per hundredweight milk price and a 73-pound average milk production per cow per day, I can calculate what my payment is per cow. So with both of those parameters set, $20 milk price, 73 pounds per day of production, my payment per cow is $322. That takes into account already the 0.9 or the 90% factor that FSA is going to use. They're not paying 100%, they're paying 90%. So that estimated payment is $322 per cow, per eligible cow. So you can see how drastically the payment changes based on how many eligible cows you have. So if we look at a 100 cow dairy with 10% of their animals eligible for the program during the time period that they're eligible, the total estimated payment with a $20 milk price and a 73-pound production average from NASS, the total estimated payment would be $3,200. Now, if in that same time period, 50% of my cows become eligible rather than 10%, my payment increases a lot, all the way up to $16,000 rather than $3,200. Now, if we take that a step further and we go all the way to 100%, 100% of my cows were pulled from production at some point due to H5N1 in the eligible time period, my estimated payment becomes $33,000. Now remember, this is an estimated payment for 100 cows and it scales linearly as your herd size increases. So if I go back to my 50% of my cows are going to become eligible for this program at a 100 cow dairy, that's a $16,000 payment. So on a 1,000 cow dairy, it's a $160,000 payment. That is the kind of money that's available through the ELAP program. There's also other funds available for various things through USDA for infected and unaffected farms when we talk about preparing biosecurity plans and things like that. So the ELAP program is not the only money available, but it is the biggest pot. Remember, in all of this, you are not eligible for the ELAP program unless you are officially positive for H5N1 with a confirmed positive test from the NVSL lab in Ames, Iowa. But I think it's important for everyone to understand what's at stake and the money that's available. If you're looking at this and deciding whether or not to test, there's money available and it can be a significant amount of money. Take that into consideration. There's all sorts of other reasons to test and to make sure that we are testing and being responsible neighbors for our poultry colleagues and other dairies in the area, as well as mitigating the potential risk to public health. But this is a straightforward economic decision that adds to the incentive to test. All right, I've rambled for long enough. We're going to end it there. If you have comments, questions, or scathing rebuttals, those go to themoosroom@umn.edu. You can also call me 612-624-3610. Check out our website, extension.umn.edu. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I will catch you on the next episode. Bye.